For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning. Giving a talk this morning, Chido Polo Lazars, who's our Tenzo, or kitchen manager, and also on the board of Ancient Dragon. In addition to being a Zen priest at Ancient Dragon, Paula is a martial arts teacher, which informs her practice as well. And Paula, thank you for giving the talk this morning.
Taigen, thank you for allowing me to do this. I wanted to talk about a Zen story, and as many of you know who practice Zen meditation, throughout the teachings and throughout the lineage, there are different stories of engagements with disciples and masters. Some are a little more esoteric and abstract that create questions for us to maybe ponder through our practice, and some are a little more direct and conversational. So I picked a story today that's a little more conversational, and it was translated from Chinese by a contemporary Chinese Chan master. So Chan is the Chinese way to say Zen, named Guo Gu. So I'm using his translation for the story, but I wanted to kind of jump into it and then have a little bit of discussion about it and some commentary along the way. The story is of Chan, or Zen Master Linji. Now, originally, Bodhidharma came from India and brought Zen Buddhism to China. And there's a lot of stories around what happened when he did. But after he did, through a series of different teachers, his teachings broke down into five different lineages. And then over time, those five lineages shrunk down to two, which we still have today, one being Rinzai and the other being Soto Zen. We're part of the Soto Zen lineage, and the founding teacher of the Soto Zen lineage was Daoshan. Dongshan. The story that I'm talking about today is about the Rinzai lineage and the teacher who founded that, who was named Linji. So the story of Chan Master Linji, one of the greatest masters in the Chan or Zen tradition, from which evolved Rinzai. Linji was the perfect monk. He studied the monastic rules and lived according to their code. But although he was straightforward and sincere, he had no yearning, being satisfied with how things were going. Even while staying at the monastery of Chan or Zen master Huang Bo, for 3 years, he felt no need to seek out instructions from him. And for those of you who might not be familiar with monastic practice, as you can see, we follow a set form of ritual to move about our space and to go about our practice when we're here at the temple. If you are in a monastery, there are forms and rituals that kind of guide your entire daily existence and your existence also at night, the way you sleep, the way you change your clothes, the way you brush your teeth. So Linji, when we say he was the perfect monk and he follows all the codes, he's following all those rituals to a letter, he's following all the behavioral codes to a letter, and he's pretty satisfied with that, and he's very comfortable in that kind of container. And when we say he felt no need to seek out instructions from the master, if you do longer retreats or if you're in a monastic setting, oftentimes you could have what's called dokusan, which we do here when we have sesshin, which is a one-on-one conversation with the teacher. So for example, if you did a longer full-day sitting retreat here at Ancient Dragon and you felt there was some aspect of your practice that you wanted to discuss with Taigen, you would sign up for one-on-one instruction or dokusan, and there's a dokusan room back there and you would avail yourself of that kind of experience so you could speak more specifically to your own practice. So Linji was happy with the way he was living within the monastic code, and even though he was at this monastery for 3 years, there wasn't one time where he wanted to have the Dokusan or one-on-one instruction from the teacher. And I could kind of understand that, but that's another story. One day, Munzo, the head monk, so this is the person kind of in charge of everything going on a more daily, mundane level, Munzo, the head monk, who was himself enlightened, asked Linji, "Why don't you go ask Master Huangbo a question?" Linji replied, "I have no questions." Munzo said, "Don't worry about it. Just make up a question. Ask Master Huangbo what the essence of Buddha Dharma is." Linji hesitated. "Now, go ask him," insisted the head monk. So Linji went into Master Huangbo's quarters and bowed, saying, "Master, I have a question." Huangbo answered, "Go ahead." Linji asked, "What is the essence of Buddha Dharma?" Wham! No sooner had Linji finished the question than Huangbo whacked him. Linji must have been puzzled. You know, I was going to do this, but I was afraid this thing's going to fall off. So no sooner had Linji finished the question than Huangbo whacked him. Linji must have been puzzled. "This crazy old man, what is he doing?" "That too I completely understand." When Linji came out of the room, Munzo, who knew all along that Linji would get hit, asked him what happened. Linji, rather upset, replied, "He hit me right after I finished the question." The head monk replied, "That's okay, that's okay. Go back and ask him again." So Linji went back. He asked, "Master, what is the essence?" Whack! Dejected, Linji left the room, thinking, "This old man is crazy. Is this the true essence of Buddha Dharma? If it is, I'm too dumb to understand it." Munzo was waiting right outside. He asked, "So, what happened?" Linji replied, "I didn't even finish my question, and he hit me again." So I'm going to pause right there for a second to say, you know, one thing that drew me to this story right away is because I don't know about you, but in my life, people pick with each other all the time. Growing up, brothers and sisters, classmates, getting in the workforce, co-workers, bosses, and employees, doing martial arts, were notorious for picking with each other. I don't find that too much in Ancient Dragon, honestly. Everybody's pretty forthright. But even me, I pick with my students constantly. I have so much fun doing it. So this really, this, you know, you could think what you want about that, but this really drew me right away because I'm like, yeah, my life is like that. People are constantly picking with each other all the time. So I was surprised. I was like, oh, great, a Zen story that points to that. Sometimes within that being picked with, it's hard to know if you're being taught or if someone's just picking with you. Or we'll say if someone's just messing with you. Okay. So as we travel through our life, I think we kind of butt up against that question a lot. But I've also found out within that, if for a second we could pause and say, maybe I'm being taught something here, a whole nother world can open up and a whole nother aspect to our practice, because our practice is really throughout our whole day. It's not just when we come to the temple. There are many things that could open up within our practice if we could be open to thinking that maybe within that conflict, we're actually being taught something. And then maybe that person who's picking with us might not be a Zen master, or maybe he is, or she is, but maybe they're not. We think they're just messing with us. But actually, our response to that could teach us an awful lot if we're willing to look at it and be introspective about it. So all of that spoke to me a lot with this kind of interaction that's going on. So back to the story. The next day, Linji went back to see the master. And before Linji even opened his mouth, Huangbao whacked him. Linji was now in a dark, dark pit of great doubt, unable to resolve the essence of Buddha Dharma and to understand why Huangbao reacted that way. So he was left with his questions. What is the essence of Buddha Dharma? What is it? The questioning drove Linji to want to leave the monastery. Okay, so now we go from something that's actually kind of funny, you know, because they're picking with each other and this guy's getting hit, but it's the master, so it can't be that bad, right? But now we have someone who is so completely discouraged by the situation that he wants to leave. He wants to walk away from the whole practice. And of course, for a teacher, I mean, that's a terrible thing. You never want to discourage someone so much that they're disheartened and they think they're in the wrong place. But, you know, again, and I'm looking again at the teacher-disciple relationship or teacher-student relationship, if the teacher takes that risk and create such a situation for the student that he almost is going to walk away, but the teacher is confident he won't, how much can actually be learned from that? But again, that's a risk for the teacher to do. That's a very risky situation because you never want to dishearten or discourage someone to the point that they're just going to give up on the whole thing. Not only in our Zen practice, but in everything in life. You know, you don't want to break someone enough that they feel they're worthless or they want to walk away or whatever they're doing doesn't make any sense. Okay. So now we have a guy who was at one time completely comfortable in what he was doing, had no questions, had no problems, and he went all the way to the other extreme where he's so discouraged he just wants to leave. Before he had a chance to leave, Muzo advised him to bid farewell to Huangbao. Muzo had gone to the master beforehand and said, you know, Linji is coming back to see you again today. This time he's leaving. You know, take it easy on him. He's almost there. He's almost there. Please give him an expedient teaching. In the future, he will be a great tree that provides shade for countless people. So oftentimes, too, the senior members of the temple will work with the teacher to create a situation that they feel might be fortuitous for the student. And we said that Muzo was also an enlightened person, so he had great confidence that Linji had the great potential to become fully enlightened. So he's in discussion with Huangbao. And again, this teaches us that although there's a hierarchy, there still is a peer review, in a sense. There still is a working as a team with the members of the hierarchy to help the students or help the people who are just coming into the practice or relatively new to the practice. So again, Muzo is asking Huangbao to give him something so that he doesn't go away completely discouraged because there's so much potential for the flowering of enlightenment. When Linji came to bid farewell to the master, Huangbao saw something precious in him. He saw his earnestness and doubt and how shaken he was by the irresolvable question. Master Huangbao spoke, "There's no need for you to go elsewhere, but why don't you just go see my Dharma brother, Da Yu? He lives on the other side of the mountain. So go and see him, and I'm sure he will help you solve this matter." So Linji walked for miles and miles and miles for many days over the mountain to go see the other master, Da Yu, and his mind continually focused on these thoughts. What is the meaning of Buddha Dharma? Why did Huangbao hit me? Where is my fault? Many times in my own life, you know, I've tried to reconcile things that have happened to me. And I'm thinking now, it doesn't happen as much now I'm in my 50s. So, you know, as you mature through your life, usually it's a normal process to kind of go to kind of a reconciliation and acceptance with the irrationality of life and the irrationality of the things that happen to you. But I remember when I was a young woman, how things that happened to me would just completely throw me for a loop. Like, I couldn't understand. Like, I felt like I'm doing all the quote-unquote right things. I felt I was a pretty good person. So how could someone treat me so badly? Or how could, out of left field, someone treat me so carelessly and not be concerned? And then as we mature, you know, because when we're younger, we're very egocentric, right? And that's normal. That's our natural human progression. We have to form a sense of self. But then as you move past that a little bit and you start looking at the wider world and you start getting concerned about what's going on in the wider world, again, the things that happen to people, the situations that people find themselves in, and the great, great suffering that's in the world was a question I, of course, and many of us, otherwise we wouldn't be attracted to Zen practice, we get pulled to and we ask about. Why is there physical suffering? Why is there hunger? Why is there war? Why can't people get along? Why could through these horrors can we have this all happen over and over again? So this story also talked about the great doubts that we have as human beings, not only about our personal life, but about the wider world that we live in, the wider environment that we're in. And that sometimes we forget when we were younger people, we really tried to reconcile those things. And of course we hit a wall because it isn't rational. There is no logic that can explain it. As soon as Dayu, the master in the temple over the mountain, as soon as Dayu saw Linji, he asked, "Where do you come from?" Linji replied, "I came from Huangbo." "Ah, Huangbo. What is this old man up to these days?" Linji exclaimed, "You know, I asked him 3 times what the meaning of Buddha Dharma is, and he hit me 3 times. Dayu laughed, clapped, and exclaimed, "Huangbo, with that old grandmotherly heart, liberating you like this, and you ask where your fault is." As soon as Linji heard this, he experienced full enlightenment. Huangbo had been so kind, like an old grandmother. He had given the teachings to Linji just as Bodhidharma gave them to the emperor. So this line, "just as Bodhidharma gave them to the emperor," goes back to that first monk that came from India that brought Zen Buddhism to China. He had his first interaction with the emperor of China because he had a reputation as a great Buddhist teacher. And it goes back to a couple of things, just 2 questions and answers between the two. One was, the emperor asked, "Did I get merit?" Because he helped Buddhism flourish in China. He built a lot of temples. So he asked Bodhidharma, "Did I get any merit?" And Bodhidharma's answer was, "None whatsoever." That was one exchange. The second one is, the emperor then asked, "Who the hell are you?" And Bodhidharma said, "I don't know." So this part of the story goes back to that exchange, meaning that Bodhidharma was trying to break through any kind of conceptualization about Dharma practice that the emperor had. Dayu is telling Linji that Huangbo is trying to cut through any conceptualization of Dharma practice that he might have had, which one could argue he didn't have and then he had because of his brother, Muzo. And then Huangbo's trying to tell him to not have it again. Linji was so happy that he explained, "So there's not much to Huangbo's teaching after all." Hearing this, Dayu sensed something happened. He grabbed Linji and asked, "You idiot! Just now you asked why you were at fault, and now you say this? What did you realize? Speak now." Without any hesitation, Linji gave Dayu 3 jabs to his ribs and laughed. Dayu said, okay, enough. I am not your teacher. Go back to Huangbo and go hit him." Dayu was indeed satisfied and joyful. The great question of life and death is extremely important. It is extremely important to have a real sense of earnestness and wonderment about your life. And the story goes on a little bit more, but I want to stop it there because there's a lot in those exchanges already. But as when Taikin asked me if I would like to give the Dharma talk, you know, he'll always say, what would you like to talk about? And usually, again, there's a conversation between the teacher and the student about what to talk about. And generally, I'll just kind of, whatever's in my life at that time. So I was looking at this translation of Guo Gu's. And I said, well, I really like this story a lot. So I sent it to Taikin to look at. And we had a little discussion about it. And he told me what that is a Hua To teaching. And I never heard of that. So, of course, I checked with Master Google. And Master Google says, the literal translation is Hua is words and To is head. So it's a short phrase that can be used as a subject of meditation. Now, we know that we could use mantras, which are usually can be in Pali or Japanese, as a focus for our concentration. Or we could use koan study, which is kind of an unanswerable immediate question that can be used, like what is the sound of one hand clapping? But this is a more specific question to the individual to help them create doubt. And these are aspects of Zen training, but for us in the Soto Zen lineage, our main practice is called Shinkantaza, or just sitting. So, you know, we talk about all these other practices because they are part of the lineage, but different lineages tend to focus on different things. So for us, we focus on just sitting, meaning sometimes you might even take one of these practices as a form of concentration to help you settle on your cushion. But what our lineage is asking you to do is once you're settled, to let go, to drop off body and mind, and to just be in your sitting. Okay, so I just want to also bring that up, that that's how our practice is a little bit different. But as you walk into the Zendo, as you can see, the Han, it reminds us of the great matter of life and death. So even when we walk in, really, the greatest question of all is this existence we have that is life and then ends in death. So all of us, I believe, if we don't have questions about anything else, we definitely have a question about that as human beings. So I think on that note, I'll end the talk and I'll open up the floor to any comments or questions or great insights you have about the doubt in your own life. Thank you.
Responses or questions about the story or how Paula expressed it, please feel free. And maybe I'll just mention that Paula talked about my being available for Dokusan or interview with the teacher during day-long sittings. I'm also available at other times, so if you're interested in individual discussions about your practice, you can let me know or email info@ancientdragon.org and we can make appointments other times. And also, we have other practice leaders at Ancient Dragon who you can talk, have practice discussions with individually. So that's available. So Douglas and Laurel are available for practice discussions. So if you want to. And generally in our tradition, we don't get people.
I was hoping you would mention that.
I don't think I've ever done that. I do sometimes.
You know, there's all these smacking and shouting stories.
And there is.
And I sometimes wonder if, and this may be simplistic, if it's an attempt to stop the conversation, the verbal, conversation and do what, who was the teacher who said to whom, just this is it? Just stop it and open your eyes and look, listen and feel now. That smack could do that if you could drop the thoughts about the smack. What the hell was that? What does that mean?
Well, I could speak to, because I get hit, the minute you get hit, the second you get hit, there is no other thought. There's nothing except the hit. There's nothing. It's like, it just blows everything out. And then, of course, then the mind starts thinking again. But in that, it's a millisecond. No, it's not even a second. It's in a millisecond. But in that millisecond, there is no other thoughts. Shikantaza. Right in that moment.
And also the sense of immediate response. So in the song of the Jewel Mara Samadhi, we sometimes chant by Dongshan, the Chinese founder of Soto Zen. He says, drumming and singing begin together. That can also be translated as hitting and chatter. They begin together. So, whap. It's just this immediacy of meeting, of responding. So beyond, again, as you were saying, beyond our ideas of ourself and our ideas of meaning and teaching and so forth, just this intimate, immediate meeting.
Sometimes it does a sound can do that for me.
Yeah.
It's like a siren. Sometimes I'll use my phone as a timer on it for sitting at home, and if I leave it on, there's an occasional email or text that comes in, and it's the sound that sometimes brings me out of my thinking back to it.
Yeah, sound is a good meditation object because it does activate.
Thank you for your talk, Paula. I really appreciate getting reminded that being discouraged is part of the creativity of this whole experience. As a person, as most of us, we want to get a good grade, we want to be successful, we want to make progress, we want to see the line keep going that way, but it's really, anything creative has lots of different raggedy parts to it. That's where the juice is. But even if it's uncomfortable or horrible or, just downright hard. But at the beginning of your story, you talked about how perfect he was and he was just sailing along. That was not productive after a while. There's nothing to make anything happen. But it's frustrating when you're in that stage. It's good to be reminded. It's like, all right, this is what it is. Just deal with it, whatever. It's good. Everything comes to an end eventually.
Right.
So thank you.
Yeah, sometimes too, we live in a culture that stresses that we should be as comfortable as possible every single moment of our lives. And that makes these ancient practices, it makes it a little more of a challenge. So and I've been lucky because this is one karmic blessing. I say my health is a karmic blessing that I have in my life, but I've also been very blessed with having very good teachers throughout my life. Very good teachers. And sometimes what's helped me, I have been able to, I feel anyway, because my teachers might disagree, but surrender to that process, that teacher-student relationship. But sometimes what could help, because it can be hard, but for your own self, it could help to make a time commitment to it. So say, all right, this appeals to me. I know I'm in a honeymoon phase, you know, because we're mature people here. You know, there's a honeymoon phase with anything new that you do that kind of talks to you. I'm in a honeymoon phase. I know that's going to fade like any relationship does, right? But I'm going to stick it out for 3 months or 6 months or a year and make that commitment to stick it out and then see what happens. So then after 3 or 6 months, in the process, it could get very hard or discouraging or flat. You know, sometimes it's not discouraging, it's just boring. You know? But you could say to yourself, all right, I'm bored to death. I've been bored to death for a month, but I said I'm going to stick it out for 6 months. Now I'm in month 4, so I'll wait another couple months, and if I'm still bored to death and this doesn't speak to me, I'm just going to go do something else. But I'm going to live out my commitment of saying I'm going to do it for 6 months. So that's a little trick, like especially in our modern society, that a person can try to see if they could deal with any discomfort in their practice.
Absolutely, there's great value in the forms and in expressing awakening, but you can't, you know, the awakening isn't then following the forms. It's having that freshness of mind so that following the forms, you're expressing that mind. And I thought it was great, you know, when he goes in to talk to Longo, it hits him sort of saying, you know, you're asking a question, you want to know, okay? It's not just following the forms, you want an answer. When you have the answer, you'll have your good month grade again, and you'll be checked off and you'll give me a badge to figure out. That'll be great. And so, you know, it's kind of sort of hitting, sort of cut it out. That's not it. And at the same time, sort of, I think my mistake is, okay, that's it too. Just that moment. Come to that moment. You've just been hit. How's that? I think there are two ways. Just shaking him up and bringing him right back right now to this. How's he going to make sense of that? And how's he going to turn that into a name or a badge? His good one badge. And I hadn't really thought about that in that story.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments or responses? New people too.
Speaking of sounds.
Picked on can be very important because, you know, to assume you know what the intention of, you know, is it a lesson or is there a negative implication, or, you know, thinking through that, we'll never come to a clear conclusion. You can never know the intention, but how we respond to it. And if you don't assume and you have an open mind to giving the person the benefit of the doubt or doing something productive with that, that's a big takeaway for me from this interview today, because I'm going through a lot of new things. I have a new job, and, you know, I've been taught a lot of things. Some things fit, some things don't. But how I manage it, I'm taking the most positive spin with it. I think it's the way to get the most out of it. So,
thank you. It's hard to be in new circumstances. And then before you know it, it's not new anymore. You know, but getting from there to there is very difficult.
That part also reminded me of the thing in the Mahalakirti Sutra, the sutra scripture about the great enlightened layman in Buddhist time, more enlightened than all the monks, where it says that only a bodhisattva can hassle a bodhisattva. So bodhisattvas are enlightened and enlightened beings. And when you're hassled by somebody or something, that means that whether they know it or not, that person who's hassling you is also a bodhisattva who is helping you to see something, as you were saying. That attitude about those difficulties is particularly can be helpful to us when we feel mistreated or messed with, as you were saying. To see it as an opportunity. Yes.
Thank you. I just could so relate to the whole bit about, oh my God, I'm doing everything right. And why am I not getting what it is that I want, the recognition that I want. And so that's really it. I just appreciate your discussion sort of around that. Yes, it's very appropriate for me with, you know, a few things that I'm experiencing in my life. And I guess just in general, I appreciated hearing that story and hearing you talk about it.
Thank you. I'm glad you were able to connect with that. Thank you. Yeah, it's always easier to look outside yourself. And again, it's really not our fault, because we were born into a sensory body, and as we grow up, we're taught to respond to the external environment. You know, I mean, obviously this is one of my great questions, you know. But this practice definitely helps us become introspective. And it's amazing to think how much room and fluidity we have inside ourselves to adapt to the external circumstances. So that's kind of where I'm at now at this point in my life. Again, being in my 50s, that, you know, I, I, I believe 100% that it's all about in here. You know. And then learning how to feel that fluidity and that impermanence and trust it. But it's an amazing journey that we're on through our lives. And it's amazing the perspective we have at different times in our life too. And I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
Any other comments or responses or questions?
Paul, thank you again for that talk. Really, really meaningful. And I was thinking through, and I think several others have made this point, of how the hitting is really, seemed to me to be kind of an interruption of, you know, a subtle kind of habitual way of thinking. And that resonated with me because I find in my life, and especially as I've been deepening my practice more, I find more and more situations where I can look and say, wait a minute, this is a habitual way I have of thinking that I need to examine and see if I should really be thinking in this way. And maybe going back, maybe that's more of a, you know, expert's mind where I think I know what I'm supposed to be doing, but I really need to step back and look at it completely afresh and in an open way. And that thought resonated for me again when I was just listening to the story.
And the more experience you have, the harder it is to do that. Like Douglas had brought up, you know. So it's always a challenge to get a fresh perspective.